Ancient Warfare, The Battle of Marathon Through the Eyes of Four Historians, Part 3, The Greek Charge. Now, this segment will touch on a lot of previous podcasts, particularly on the various reenactments. So, from Herodotus' standpoint, the Greeks charged, quote, at a run, end of quote, which would be the term dromo, for 8 stadii, or 8 lengths of a Greek stadium. That's almost a mile. Most consider this impossible. Hans Durbruch claimed a heavily equipped Greek hoplite unit couldn't cover 120 to 150 meters at a run without completely exhausting its strength. Plus, it would also have broken its unit cohesion. So, did the Athenians run? As I've mentioned in a previous show in the 1970s, Dunlin and Thompson tried to test this using some of their college students. Some carried weight, some carried, some hooked up to various devices in a human performance lab. They ran on a treadmill set at 7 miles per hour and then measured the results. Now, Billows accepted their conclusion that heavily armored men or armed men could not have run more than 150 meters without becoming too exhausted to fight. Billows also argued that the Greeks had no need to run further than 150 or even 100 meters because of the range of the Persian arrows. Lacy argues that the Dunlin-Thompson tests were invalid because the college students were PE majors and they were not trained to carry heavy loads. He does admit that at a sprint of a mile, that would have wrecked the cohesion of the Greek phalanx. So he concludes that they advanced at double time for most of the distance and began running only when they came into range of the Persian bowmen. Now, Krentz, the issue of the running charge is important because it's what Herodotus emphasizes using the term dromo, at a run. 4 times he uses that in a single paragraph. Now, weight, the most quoted weight for hoplite equipment, which is 72 pounds, goes back to 1852 in a German book that authors simply estimated what the various items that a hoplite would have would weigh. But new finds of ancient equipment and reenactor reconstructions now permit evidence based on numbers. A 490 BC Athenian hoplite would have carried between 28 and 45 pounds of equipment, and less without a corset and shin guards, and most would have had leather armor, not full bronze armor. And remember, even that was capable of stopping the Persian bowmen's arrows at the same time. Now, the switch from walking gait to running. There is at least a moment when neither foot touches the ground, and that's usually at about 4.5 miles an hour. 5 miles an hour, which equals a 12-minute mile, would satisfy what Herodotus says. 7 miles an hour, much less a full sprint, is absolutely unnecessary. Now, one of the things about this, okay, now I've just turned 66 years of age, and I work out 5 days a week in the gym. And I do 3 or 4 miles a day. I usually do a mile and then do some weightlifting and some other things and then do another mile. Now, I can do the 12-minute mile on the first time around. But usually, I can get pretty close to the 4 miles per hour even at the end of the day. And, of course, I don't have any equipment on me. But then again, I do different things. So it's not really that unusual, I think, once you get trained individuals and they're used to carrying this weight to get that kind of a situation going. Now, of course, the Athenians did not have to maintain marching and or running with overlapping shields. And Herodotus, of course, says nothing about tight cohesion. So they could have, you know, done their thing. So I believe that they simply halted briefly every so often to reform and perhaps did this just short of contact with the Persian infantry. That would allow them to maneuver around pretty pretty reasonably. Now, Herodotus does not mention Persian arrows, but does mention Persian horses. While Persian archers were certainly a very important part of the Persian army, they were deeply committed to their cavalry. Krentz, and I agree with Krentz, believes that the Greeks began their advance towards the Persian army probably at a fast walk, but a mile from the Persians, someone saw Persian cavalry entering the plain of Marathon. Miltiades, knowing that his men had crossed the widest part of the plain before the cavalry arrived, probably ordered the men to pick up the pace, perhaps to move forward, you know, so that the run was basically to prevent the Persian cavalry from outflanking the Greek forces and interrupting their charge, as well as neutralizing one of the most dangerous parts of the weapons that the Persians had against the phalanx in an open plain. So this would go a long ways to explaining, because remember if we talked about the horses in the past, and that if they were encamped, it would be encamped at a location where you could only move your horses through one at a time. It wasn't like you could just, the Greeks are coming, you gather up your men and you have this storming huge group coming out. This would allow the Greeks to get in the position, and for that matter, you could have had a targeted section of the Greek hoplite formation to get to that position and then move forward. Now, of course, a lot of times people are thinking, okay, well, the Greeks are attacking, what are the Persians doing? Well, they're sitting in place. Remember how the Persians function. They're not designed to march out and go toe-to-toe with an opponent. Their job is to have their spearmen in front to protect their archers. The archers are supposed to disorganize the enemy, drive them nuts, kill some of them, and then the cavalry is supposed to do all the work, with then the infantry moving out at the end to kind of mop up. So in absence of the cavalry, the Persians are just going to sit put, firing as many arrows as they possibly can. And so the Greeks, once they have reached a spot on the Marathon plain that they've neutralized the cavalry, if it even existed at that point, they could just simply do what they needed to do to close in on the Persians, because they're not coming towards them. They'll be fighting once they engage, and then you'll have the lighter central force of the Greeks move back, which allows the Persians to think they're winning, run in, and then the two wings collapse on them. So it's one of those things. Now, I will eventually do a discussion, because there's a big discussion about just how well-trained the Athenian forces were. And there is an article that I found that talks about Socrates' military experience. So we'll see how that kind of training comes into play. Well, we have one more of this genre of material. So the next time I'll finish this question with the historians, and it'll be about how did the Greeks end up winning. Now, the sources for this are the ones that have been using, you know, the historians. R.A. Billows, his book Marathon, How One Battle Changed the Western Civilization. Lacy's First Clash, The Miraculous Greek Victory at Marathon and Its Impact on Western Civilization. Krentz, The Battle of Marathon. The article, How Did the Battle of Marathon Go Down? Ancient History Special on Marathon, 2011. Also, The Persian Fire by Holland. Persian Wars by Herodotus. And Persia and the Greeks' Defense of the West by A.R. Burns. So I hope you enjoyed that, and as always, don't forget to come by the website, new website, historyaccordingtobob, or .com, or sumahistorica.com, and ask a question, leave a comment. If you like what we're doing, there's a nice way that you can support us with a monthly little bit rather than a big chunk, and as always, thank you very much.